Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than defend positions. You know, in these most contentious times, what if there were a way for we the people to gather above and beyond the battlefield conversation and focus on the common purpose we share? The Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish, and at this moment, our democratic republic looks awfully perishable. Fortunately, a paradigm-breaking conference is happening in Washington, D.C. this April that looks to, in the Swami's words, bring left and right and front and center. As the conference website says, only citizens can change society. Quote, the purpose of the conference is to create a conversation about what we as a people and as a nation can become. Here's another quote. Politicians offer policies that are like medication to cure the fears of the future. But these policies only address symptoms. The cure requires a vision of an America based on the values of the Declaration and the Constitution, designed for the new reality that is radically different from anything imagined by Jefferson or Hamilton. Well, imagine bringing solutionaries together and to television and ground that vision in reality. This conference seems to reflect the evolution of revolution from something led by a charismatic leader to something that emerges from the grassroots up and brings forth the uncommon wisdom of common people. Our guest this week is Richard Margolis, conference chair, who has spent more than half century as a psychologist, political activist, researcher, and consultant. Richard Margolis, PhD, is a clinical psychologist and leadership consultant. He's worked on numerous research and consulting projects in the U.S. and Europe with Michael Maccabee and other associates for over 45 years. He consulted to the senior military and civilian leadership of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for 15 years, and he wrote the Corps' Learning Organization Doctrine based on the thinking of the Maccabee Group and General David Petraeus' Counterinsurgency Doctrine. He designed and taught the Corps' leadership course in districts of the Corps around the United States. He has also consulted with public, private, and international organizations in this country, Sweden, and Ireland, and work with Michael Maccabee and associates on the Robert Wood Johnson-funded research on leadership and exemplary healthcare systems. The research was basis of the 2013 book, Transforming Healthcare Leadership, authored by Michael Maccabee, Cliff and Jay Norman, and Richard Margolis. He is also on the board of the Lincoln Group of D.C. and leads its Lincoln Study Group. Welcome, Richard.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be with you and your audience.
Well, thank you. Now, we are probably in what's the most contentious election year ever, where the polarized divisions in our country seem to be more pronounced than we've ever seen. Why this conference on visioning a better America? And can a vision like this be actually seen and heard above the fray and the noise?
Well, certainly, it's a contentious time, but we do have to recall in history that the election of 1860 was an extremely contentious time, and no sooner had the new president, Abraham Lincoln, been inaugurated, but the traitors who wanted to defend their slave power started withdrawing their states. And so that was a time that everyone will acknowledge was an extremely contentious time and led to actually hot war. But this is we're in a kind of a cold war domestically. And it's always time in the midst of conflict for some people to say, where are we going? Are we just going to continue to fight over different policies and different ideologies? But what kind of country do we really want to create? And so the organizing committee for this conference has been inviting people to come and speak to that question. And we've invited them to address, first of all, what is the particular challenge that they've feel most passionate about and they have the greatest knowledge and experience with, and how will that challenge be resolved by an ideal future, by a view of what our country can become? And then third, we want them to speak to what can citizens do to bring about that ideal future, because we want all these presentations to be rooted in our founding values, the charters of our country, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. And it's not like we're starting from zero. We have values as a nation. In fact, our history has been the continual struggle of the citizens to make it, as the preamble says, a more perfect union. That is the history of the United States. That's what the Civil War was about. That's what the struggle for women's rights is about. That's what the struggle for extending rights to other people. So that when the Declaration says all men have unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we have been struggling as a people since the founding to include all people in those rights. And that's really the spirit and the perspective that these speakers are going to address. What does that mean today? How do we bring to the present and into the future those values?
You know, everything, history seems to be, there's a joke, you know, those who fail to learn the lessons of history condemn the rest of us to repeat it. There's a lot of people who don't really understand very much about the founding of this country. I mean, you know, when we were kids, you know, we had all of this American history and it was part of our knowledge base. But now everything seems so fluid and people are interested in current events and that sort of thing. What kind of response has that gotten so far from young people going back and recognizing the founding documents and heritage of this country?
Well, that's a very important point. In the context of the reality that many school districts across the country have dropped civics in favor of physics, in favor of science.
Yeah.
But if we're not teaching our students about the basic structure of government and our basic values, then they go forward not really understanding it. And a survey is done every couple of years called the World Values Survey, which is done in 100 countries. And it asks systematically questions about what do people in these 100 countries value? And one of the questions they ask, is it important that you live in a democracy? And the shocking results from the last time it was done, that 70% of young people in our country do not care if they live in a democracy. Now, you really are dumbfounded at a statistic like that. And I think we can reasonably conclude that they don't really understand what a democracy is. It's taken for granted. They probably went through high school, never were given civics, didn't study American history. I mean, even in colleges today, many colleges have dropped American history as a core requirement to graduate. That's shocking.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, I think that this is certainly a remedial conversation, and it's late in the game to have the remedial conversation. And I suppose that those people, young people who are active and want to see a better world, are likely to be attracted to something like this, because perhaps it points us to a more uniting vision. I think that I was talking to a friend who's been a transpartisan political activist for quite a number of years, and he talked about how different it was back in the 70s and even the 1980s, where there was a lot of fluidity between the parties, that one party would vote for the policies of other parties. And, you know, we've seen that, Richard Nixon, after all, was the one that started the EPA and so on. But then shortly after, you know, we see the Powell Memorandum, and we see the industrial forces begin to mobilize against this next phase of democracy, which is more of economic justice and so on. And that's part of the reason why these courses are not taught, that they've been de-emphasized. So we have some remedial work to do, I would think.
Well, that's for sure. But, you know, I think that it's important to aspire high, even in the face of terrible events going on today around us, and to keep a reasonable level of expectation. So the question you asked earlier is this resonating with people? Well, I can't fully answer that, because we've just begun to enter the kind of communication phase of getting the word out about the conference. It took a lot of time to organize it, to get a room in Congress, to get IRS tax exemption as an educational charity, to get C-SPAN to cover the conference, to just create the infrastructure for the conference. So I can't fully answer the question, how is it resonating? But even if there isn't an immediate resonance, we are interested in continuing the work of creating this conversation, because, the horse race of the election will have its own passion and will absorb a great deal of the public's attention. But nonetheless, we have to try to create a space where people begin to talk more fully about what kind of country we want.
That's really very, very important. One of the reasons why I was interested in Marianne Williamson's presidential campaign is that in the second debate, she began to break some of those ideas through the soundless barrier. And you can see also, there was a USA Today poll several months ago that indicated that most people in this country don't like the polarization. They would much prefer that we find a way to gather around the virtues and values that most of us share and begin to work together and collaborate. And it seems that the political system, what's been called the political industrial complex, seems to mitigate against that, and it seems to be working toward feeding those two polarities with wedge issues. So I find what you're doing is very, very important, and it's probably the only thing, this kind of work is probably the only thing that can save us at this time. So let's talk a little bit more about the purpose and the focus and the conference itself. How is it laid out? How are people going to be able to participate? What are some of the presenters and so on? What would you like to see at the end of this conference?
Well, let me just address a little bit of that, because we may be interrupted by an advertisement shortly.
Oh, but, yeah, you got 2 minutes. I appreciate you being aware of that. But I'll stop you if I need to. take it well, one piece at a time. It was a complex question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we just want to create a space where people begin to raise the question and create a dialogue. We don't expect that in the 4 days of the conference that we will conclude with a neatly tied up vision for the country. We're not attempting to do something so grand. We're really trying to speak to some of the major issues that we need to address as a country, and what kind of country would do that? What kind of country would take up those issues? And so we are aspiring high, but our expectations are modest. And coming out of the conference, there will be some outcomes. So it's not just a one-time and done event. It's going to lead to a series of outcomes. One of which is we want to put a book together of the presentations, and we're going to invite some other people to contribute to the book for a general audience, but also as a basic text for a college course that we want to create with some of the presenters, because some of the presenters come from 5 or 6 different universities and colleges, and those could be beta in which we work with them to develop a course around visioning. What is the process of creating a vision, and how do citizens work to realize a vision? That's a whole course right there.
It is. That's quite an amazing idea. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Richard Margolis. We're going to be talking about visioning a better America when we return from these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
We're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest Richard Margolis, and we're talking about this conference, Visioning a Better America. You know, this seems to be such an underestimated, powerful tool of people getting together and focusing on purpose. You know, every business has a mission statement. Why can't our country have a mission statement? Why don't you say something about that?
Yes, well, that's a very good point. Actually, we did start with a vision statement, and when we were talking earlier about the disappearance of teaching civics to students, one of the best ways to teach civics is to start with the Declaration of Independence, which is an extraordinary document. And the framers of the Declaration and then the Constitution 11 years later, they were visionaries, but they weren't perfect people, for sure.
Yeah.
They were largely white men of privilege, and many of their lives were based in the enslaved and exploited labor of people that they kept from freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these framers were able to vision a world, a country that would be very different from their own lives. And they acknowledge, consciously or unconsciously, that they weren't perfect, because it says right in the preamble of the Constitution, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union." And they go on to say that the people should continue to make a more perfect union. They acknowledge that it was the people, the citizens, us, that should continue to work to make a more perfect union. So I just want to emphasize that we're not starting with a clean sheet of paper. We have values as a country. They're quite extraordinary. And there are 35 countries in the world today that have their own declarations of independence that are largely copied after our own. And that is the highest kind of flattery. And so what we want to do is update, what are those values and that vision? What does that mean given the challenges that we face? You know, we face amazing challenges. We could go over those, but before we go too much further, I want to mention that we have a website called visioningabetteramerica.com, and there's a great deal of information there, including resources, but it describes the purpose of the conference, the purpose of the country, realizing a vision. So I really encourage your listeners, when they get a chance, to go to the website and mouse around it and find more information. And there is also a place where they could sign up to get updates from the conference and our outcomes after the conference.
You know, we do have that on the Om Times Radio page for my show, and on my Wiki Politiki webpage. The show will be in the archives very soon, in a day or so. And then there's a link. There'll be a link to the website for the conference on this page. So anybody can access that at any time. And I've been through it, and I was rather impressed with the kinds of presenters that you're having. Talk a little bit about some of the presenters and, you know, what they might be bringing to this conference.
Sure, I'd be happy to. First, let me just mention, pick up something that you asked about earlier, which is kind of the some of the values that structure the conference. The mm-hmm. conference is not, it's not about one party against another party. It's not going to really allow people to denounce particular people, politicians, or parties that they don't like. It's really to focus people with their positive thoughts and energies in the spirit of Lincoln, as I say, who said during the Civil War, "We are friends." This is during a time when people are killing each other by the thousands. He yeah. said, "We are friends. We must not be enemies." And he said, "We must live together with charity for all and malice toward none." I mean, there's a deep heart and a thinker in the midst of civil war. And that's the spirit of the conference. Now, mm-hmm. in terms of some of the speakers, we currently have 20 speakers over 4 days. There may be a couple that have to drop out because of schedule changes, but they'll be replaced. But I can describe some of the speakers now. And currently we have 50% men and 50% women and about 30% people of color. And so let me go over a couple of them just to give you a sense.
Sure.
For example, Gar Alperovitz, who's a historian and a political economist, his first book was called The Decision to Use the Atomic Bomb. He went on to be a co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative, which is a group of about 40 people who work with cities, mainly cities that are depressed, that are run down, to create local industries, most of which are employee-owned, to bring new economic life to these cities. Let me go on to, for example, Georgette Bennett, who is a doctor of sociology and criminology, but her real extraordinary action has to do with the back-channel diplomacy. She's very interested in reducing conflict where there's particularly religious-based conflict, and she works behind the scene to reduce that kind of animosity and hatred. And she, for example, in 2019, she won the AARP Purpose Prize for her work on behalf of Syrian war victims. She's quite extraordinary. Rick Barton is a peace builder. He's been in the State Department. He started USAID's Office of Transition Initiatives. And he was the first Assistant Secretary of State for Conflict and Stabilization Operations. So he works to really create, in conflict situations, a way out, a way toward peace in very difficult situations. And he he's at the Woodrow Wilson Center at Princeton University right now. Anne Franzenberg is a woman farmer who, with her husband, they live in Iowa. They have a 500-acre farm, and they decided that instead of going in the direction of taking on a lot of debt and mechanizing their farm and going into agribusiness, to find a different way forward. And Anne is on the board of a group, a farmer-led group called Practical Farmers of Iowa, that teach farmers how to steward the land, preserve the soil, and not pollute the watershed. And they're quite, I was very happy to find them, and because they have a vision that they're living out in the way they run their farm and teach other local farmers. Hila Hanif is a Muslim American. She was born in Afghanistan. Is the director of Afghan strategy and policy in the office of the Secretary of Defense. She's a young woman. She's a dedicated civil servant. Myra Jackson is trained as an electrical engineer. She's a representative to the UN. She is a biosphere consultant. She works with local communities, with their local businesses, the utilities. Oftentimes these are communities along rivers, and she creates a collaborative alliance of all these different stakeholders in a community to preserve the local economy and also the local ecology, the rivers, the forests, et cetera. Lawrence Lessig is a nationally known professor of law at Harvard Law. He's one of the country's leading, the New Yorker, for example, called him the most important thinker on intellectual property in the internet era. And he has a number of books, but one of the things that he's working on right now is the National Popular Vote Initiative, which many of your viewers may know about, which is an attempt to have states pass laws which commit their electoral votes to go not to the candidate who wins their state in the national election, but to the candidate that wins the popular vote nationwide. Now, what's really extraordinary about this movement is if they get to 270 electoral votes, they're already at 180 electoral votes. If they get to 270, they will, because 10 states have already passed these laws. If they get to 270, they will have, in effect, practically done away with the Electoral College. You don't have to amend the Constitution, which is extremely difficult, if they can get just 90 more electoral votes in states that would choose to do this. So that's quite radical and innovative.
I've always appreciated his work, by the way, and his working with Represent Us, which is another very excellent organization to really change end corruption at the state level, which is easier, changing the state house rules and electoral rules and gerrymandering and so on. So he's a very influential individual. I was happy to see him on the roster.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone else who's going to speak is Davidica Little Spotted Horse. She's an activist, a matriarch. She's an enrolled member of the Ogallala Lakota tribe living on the Pine Ridge Reservation. She was raised as a traditional Lakota woman, and she's very steeped in the history, in the Lakota history of her people. And she's an artist, and she's going to speak about how you bring people together around culture. Quite extraordinary. I was very happy to find her because I'm looking for the natural diversity of the American people. You know, you and I, Steve, we're just two people, but there are 330 million citizens in our country. And while many conferences are filled with, you know, college-educated white males, I think it's important to bring together a diversity of who the American people are. And so I'll go on and mention a couple more.
Yeah, go ahead and mention a few more.
Sabina O'Hara is a teacher and a researcher, and she's an agricultural economist, and she runs a very innovative program at the University of District Columbia, which is the only exclusively urban land-grant university in the United States. And what she does is she works with citizens locally. There are parts of Washington, D.C., if people don't know Washington, there are parts of Washington, D.C. that are profoundly impoverished, food deserts where people do not have access to healthy food. And what Dr. O'Hara is doing is she's getting her students to work with citizens around creating community, essentially small community farms where poor citizens of the city raise healthy food, which they get to eat themselves. And also she's gotten them to be politically active and affect local stores and really forcing them to bring healthier food in instead of you know, packaged food and Cheetos and sugared soda drinks, but to bring fruit and vegetables and really and also teach local citizens how to cook and eat healthily. I mean, that's just an innovation we need all over the country.
You know, I have to say this. Back when you and I lived in Washington, D.C. In the early 70s, I think the Institute for Policy Studies actually sprung forth this. Carl Hess and David Morris created something called the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And this is that was the beginning of rooftop gardens and trout farms in your basement and that sort of thing. So it's really good. I mean, these are enduring ideas, and it's good that they're being reiterated also in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good memory. Another presenter is Judge Thomas Ross, who formerly was the president of the University of North Carolina. It's a very large state school. He's now the president of the Volcker Alliance, which was founded by the former Federal Reserve Chair, Paul Volcker. And it's focused on advancing the effective management of government. And he's going to speak about public service. How do we attract the best students to public service at a time when so many people in the public sphere are running government down? We've even had a president who said government was the problem. That's not what the founders thought. The founders thought government was the tool of the people to achieve their safety and their happiness and the common good. And so Judge Ross is going to speak about how do we rejuvenate the public service and attract young people. I'll mention one more person. Stephanie Wilkinson is an entrepreneur living in Lexington, Virginia, rural Virginia, and she happens to have a PhD in the history of religion. What's interesting about Stephanie is she's a co-owner of a little restaurant in Lexington. Lexington's not a very big town, maybe 10,000 people. And the restaurant's called the Red Hen. And your listeners may remember that a member of the current administration, the spokeswoman for the current administration, was having dinner there, and the people who work in that restaurant decided that they wouldn't serve her.
I remember,
Got into the national news. It was a crisis for Stephanie because she couldn't, you know, go in the kitchen, cook the food, and come out and serve it herself. And the staff was just saying, we can't serve these people. So she very diplomatically explained what had happened. Since that time, she has received thousands of emails, she's told me, across the spectrum, some of whom say, you know, you did the best you could in a very difficult circumstance. Other people said, you know, we're gonna do damage to you, you're a terrible person, et cetera. And she's going to write a book based upon learned about the American people as a result of that incident. And she, by the way, writes periodic op-eds in the Washington Post, and coincidentally, she has one today. And I'd recommend if anyone wants to go to the Washington Post and look at it, it's called Thank You, Donald Trump, in which she talks about how his election has really led to a kind of a local rejuvenation that she's experienced in her little town of civic-mindedness, and that people pay greater attention to listening to each other and trying to understand each other across their differences. So it's quite interesting op-ed, and she'll make a wonderful presentation.
Thank you. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with Richard Margolis talking about visioning. Steve Behrman on Wiki Politics.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman, we're back with Richard Margolis for talking about visioning a new America. I really appreciate the diversity, you know, not just, you know, the ethnic diversity and all that, but really the diversity of, I would call them works of heart, you know, the things that people really have the heart to do, a contribution that they want to make. And this seems to be a new order that wants to weave itself together in spite of the structures that are already in place. Now, you and I go back a long way. We met more than 50 years ago when I was involved with an alternative high school in Washington, D.C. You were working to end the Vietnam War, encouraging young people to experience communal living. I see that in the years since you've done work with U.S. military, Army Corps of Engineers, and so on. So I'm just curious as to how, and now there's an evolution of a much broader view that's really encompassing a much, much larger scope of who America is and where we might be going. How have your views evolved and developed since that time?
Yes, I would say that my values haven't changed that much because they're American values. A commitment to equal rights, to the common good, to what the preamble to the Constitution calls domestic tranquility, equal justice. And the form of seeking those is really evolved in my mind because I've just always been interested in history. And I've gone back, and though I'm a psychologist, I've gone back and been reading a lot about American history, particularly, of course, the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln, but also the founding and the conflicts and the compromises that the founders themselves had to make in order to hold themselves together, because there were profound differences. The most extreme, of course, was over slavery, where some of the founders insisted on preserving their lives of privilege based upon slaves and enslaved African Americans, and others were very much opposed to that, and yet they had to hold themselves together. So just studying how they did that and how their grand but imperfect document, the Constitution – did preserve slavery, and it was inevitable that the Civil War would come because they couldn't bring themselves to resolve that conflict. But just understanding that, studying that, gives you a perspective about the difficulties of our country and what we have struggled with and what we're continuing to struggle with. There's still profound inequalities of income, much of that based upon race. The inequality is passed generation to generation within the families and within the systems that continue to continue this inequality, this structural inequality. So just understanding that has given me a sense of what we need to affirm about our values and the work we still have to do as citizens.
It makes total sense. You know, I'm curious as well. You know, your background and training is as a clinical psychologist. So, given that background, how is your study of psychology influenced your political perspective? And if we look at our current political, the new word is situation. How do we psychologically, or maybe even spiritually, emerge from this very dangerous and toxic polarized field of misunderstanding and misinformation and fake news and lies a psychologist standpoint?
That's a very interesting question. Well, first of all, it has to do with controlling one's own anger and being able to listen. And after all, as a clinical psychologist, it's a listening profession. Mm-hmm. I listen. You know, one of the first questions I ask a patient who comes to therapy is, tell me why you came. And I listen because that's how you learn. And I've tried to bring that quality into my relationships outside the consulting room. And, so I've had some extraordinary conversations with people who are devoted followers of the current occupant of the White House, and I've had dinner with them, I've sat and talked with them, and I've learned a great deal that I would not have been able to understand if I'd approached them with any kind of attitude of anger, disappointment, or feeling that for some reason I was better informed than they were. So I think that's one quality that we can look at in ourselves, is putting aside, struggling with our own anger, if we feel it, at the situation, and really open our hearts to try to understand our fellow citizens and just why they are attracted to ideas and personalities that may seem to us to be completely unbelievable. How can they possibly believe in these people and these ideas? Well, ask them, listen, and you'll find that in the process, you grow as a person. You grow in understanding, you grow in connection with other citizens, and you know, I've often thought in working on this process, this conference and the outcomes, that the country was established with a declaration of independence. And I think we're getting to a point where we need a declaration of interdependence, mm-hmm. that we're all interdependent as citizens. We're interdependent as nations. There are 9 countries that have nuclear weapons. Anyone by mistake or intention launching these weapons could lead to nuclear winter that could potentially destroy the natural environment and life on this planet. We're interdependent. We're interdependent with nature in the way we relate to the environment, to our consumption, to the way we live our lives. So this is I think, something that many of the speakers will be touching on as they address the different challenges that they're engaged in.
You know, this is a really, really important point, this listening piece, because I worked with Joseph McCormick, who he and I wrote a little book called Reuniting America. He was a pioneer in transpartisan engagement, got somehow Move On and Christian Coalition together, and they formed an alliance to preserve net neutrality about 12 or 13 years ago. And I learned so much from how he engages with people in these transpartisan events by simply having people start with their own story and their own lives. And there's something now called Living Room Conversations. Joan Blades from Move On and John Gable, a conservative, have taken that work up, and they're continuing with it. And when you actually, so much of the political discourse, particularly if you can just simply hit send or make a post on a blog, it's really dehumanizing. It's just dehumanizing. And so when you're able to rehumanize other people and you find that you like them, you know, Joan Blades and from Move On and Michelle Combs from Christian Coalition, they met at a retreat that Joseph put together, and they liked each other. They liked each other. They became close friends and colleagues. And when you're able to do that, then we can begin to reestablish perhaps, you know, the Jeffersonian, Hamiltonian dichotomy of how and why we pull together in times of crisis, which we're in right now. I got the sense from the early part of our conversation that there's a part of you that, in spite of everything that's going on right now, there's a spark of optimism that you have. And I want you to expand upon that. You know, what is it that you're seeing right now that points us toward an evolutionary rather than devolutionary future?
Yes. Well, when you're able to listen and the other person feels that you're not trying to push them around or make them feel bad, that if you can articulate some fact or some logic that makes them feel like they're uninformed, when they realize you're not actually doing that, then they become more open, and it transforms the conversation. And I think that's true of millions of people, that if we approach each other with a spirit of openness and listening, we can then have more genuine conversation. But here's the really important point. When you get to that point, you can then talk about the question, well, you can ask people, well, what kind of country would be good for us to have, given all these challenges? You know, and you could empathize with them. For example, if they live in a small town that's been decimated by a corporation that's taken the work out of their town, and there's a 25% unemployment rate, or people are suffering from untreated mental illness or opioid addiction or disease or whatnot, you know, there's intense poverty in the country. Automated production has eliminated many jobs. If you can empathize with people and begin to understand what they're feeling, then you can talk with them about, well, what kind of country would we like to have that would have solved these problems? You know, how can we come together and in a new way? Now, that's, I think, the best way is to start a conversation about an ideal future, a vision. And you can recall that the country was founded with a vision. And then you have a new kind of conversation. You're not arguing, you're building something.
Well, that's really, really excellent. And thank you so much for the reminder that we were founded on a vision. That is really so very important, because these days it's so much easier for people to rail against what they don't want, to push against what they don't like, than to really have that open sky space of, well, what would you like instead? I think we've been so used to being thwarted in that, that a lot of people won't even go there. It's perhaps more threatening to tell a vision that's a positive vision than to rail against a dystopia. So we got about a minute and a half left. So is there anything else, Richard, that you want to add about the conference? Again, I want to tell people that on our Wiki Politiki website, on this page with the recording of this radio show, they can click right onto the visioning a better America website. So anything else as a final word you want to say?
Yes. We purposely are holding this conference in Congress, in the one of the House office building conference room, because the House of Representatives is known as the House of the People. And we are the, and we have two honorary congressional sponsors. One is a conservative Republican, one is a progressive Democrat. You'll see on the website who they are. And what's extraordinary about the two citizens is they hold count together.
Well, we've been talking with Richard Margolis. Richard, thank you for being with us, and thank you for bringing this conference to the People's House, the House of Representatives.